Here we go. Good morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting. The special meeting agenda today will now come to order. Anyone has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you would silence them now, it's not to disrupt the meeting. We appreciate it. And if you would all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Moving along now to item number three. This is discussion and possible action, the approval of the agenda for November the 19th, 2018. Mr. Whitten, do we have any changes to make to today's agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Staff has been asked to recommend that we move items 10, 11, and 12 up on the agenda to immediately after item 5.
All righty. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, we get a motion to approve this with the changes made.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for November 19, 2018, noting that we will be moving items 10, 11, and 12 to follow item 5.
Very good.
Second the motion.
Moved and second to approve today's agenda with the changes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 4. This discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Start with the right side of the room with Sheriff Antonoro.
Yeah. Are you going to confess to something?
Just a couple of quick things. Our newest deputy graduated from the police academy on Thursday, and he is actually starting his first shift today. So, Logan Wonderly, he's resident out in the Highlands, so look forward to seeing his face out there and about. And, of course, no good deed goes unpunished. We've lost one in the last month, and had another one just give his notice. One went to the state, and one is going to Oco County Sheriff's Office, so we're down a position again, try as we might, but that's all I have for today.
Great. Any questions for the Sheriff?
Yes.
Thank you, Jerry. All right. Next up, over at the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Let me get this done, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay, a little limited staff today.
Yeah.
Chief Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
County Manager, Mr. Whitten.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman. Might be the first time you've ever heard that.
County Clerk, Mr. Stevens. Today? Very good. All right. That will go ahead and conclude item number 4 of the committee and staff reports. We'll move on now to item number 5. These are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment. Start to the far end of the table with Commissioner Gilman.
Nothing today, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Lance. Vice Chairman McGuffey.
Just a couple things. Of course, we just had our annual NACO state conference. It was held in Minden. It was a good conference. Minden did a good job with their presentation, the facilities. It was well received by all. Next was the Veterans Day parade was. Looked like we had a great turnout. The parade was a good turnout. I guess if I was going to be a critic, it was a 100th anniversary of the World War One, the end of World War One. So I was kind of surprised that we didn't have a war vet leading the parade. No, thank you.
There's no World War One vets left.
No, there's not. Yeah, but could have had World War Two. A war vet would have been good.
That's right. Thank you, Jack. Let's see, a couple of things. If anyone has noticed at nighttime how the courthouse parking lot is continually full, is it that the efforts of the Piper's Opera House programs over there, they're constantly booking this venue now all of the time. They had the murder mystery things going on for several nights, sold out. The burlesque show, I think, was sold out. Saturday night, the NRA had their annual dinner there, sold out. So it's just amazing how, in just short order, how the tourism's team over there is just, it's just, they're doing just a terrific job. So anyway, they deserve some congratulations on their efforts next door. So it's great. Another thing is we don't have another meeting between now and Christmas on the Comstock, and that will be our annual Christmas parade, which will be Saturday, December the 1st. And the parade usually kicks off about 5 p.m. They like it to be dark enough so that the floats that are illuminated can will sparkle out there, followed by a David John and the Comstock Cowboys will do their Christmas show at Piper's Opera House as usual. I think it starts at 7:30, and you can expect that to be another sold-out performance over there. I also attended Nevada NACO, and once again, we had an honoree from Story County, and that would come out of the Comptroller's Office. Jennifer McCain received her CPO, which is Certified Public Official Certificate. It takes a long time to get through this. It's not grueling, but it's very time-consuming, and it's a great education award. It's provided by the University of Nevada Extended Studies. And, of course, Jack and I have completed that program and so many others in the county, and it's a testament to dedication and county government service. So much that NACO awards the recipient a check for $500, and Poolpack also awards a certificate for $500, because they figured by completing this course that you are better educated and less chance of having any problems later on within your career within government. So it's a pretty nice reward for the efforts that you get. It turns out to about 50 cents an hour, so it works out pretty well. I'd also like this time to pass on our condolences to several, since our last meeting, I'd be able to recall some of these. The longtime Virginia City resident Martin Slack passed away a couple of weeks ago. He lived in a beautiful old home on B Street that faces C Street, a house that had been burned several years ago, and he and his wife had restored this house to great early day elegance. And so he'll be missed. He was a great old gentleman that I would see at the post office all the time. Another local resident and resident artist, Louise Kerr, or Carr, I think we might have pronounced her name, but she was a fabulous artist and a very well-liked lady, and so she's left us now, too. Just last week, we lost a former Virginia City resident, graduate of Story County High School. That was Ann Marks. Ann had a great career in the medical field, and her family owned the Crystal Bar for 100 years before they had passed away, retired, and had given up the saloon business. And of course, they sold the building to Virginia City Tourism, where we had our tourism headquarters down there. So anyway, the Marks family, longstanding Virginia City residents, Comstockers, or hot water plugs if you're a graduate down there. So anyway, we're going to miss all of those that have passed on. Those are going to conclude my remarks at this time. And so in the effort of time, the sheriff needs to move on, so we're going to move on to item number 10 right now, which is where we're going to recess as the Story County Board of Commissioners and convene as the Story County Liquor License Board, which brings us on right on to number 11, which is discussion and possible action. Amending of existing liquor license for the Ponderosa Saloon to add off-sale to that. So, Sheriff Antonoro.
As indicated, this is just an amendment to their existing liquor license. We've done this on a few other businesses in the county that has requested amendments after they've been licensed already for a while. I understand when it was agendized for the last meeting, there was some question that arose about the process. Usually where it is somebody who holds a liquor license, we just look over their history, make sure there's no violations, make sure it's not going to cause any disruption in the standard flow of traffic, there's no public safety issues. So in this, I'd say just an amendment to their license to allow for off-sale, and we recommend approval.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Sheriff. Is there any public comment regarding this item? Hearing none, can I get a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve the amending of the existing liquor license for the Ponderosa Saloon, Cheryl Bailey, the owner, at located at 106 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, 89440.
Second.
And it's been moved to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great. Thank you, Sheriff. Okay, and item number 12 now is we're going to adjourn as the Story County Liquor Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Bringing us up now to item number 6. This is a workshop discussion only. Presentation on the TRIC Affluent Pipeline Project and formation of related tax increment area. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Johnson.
If I may, Lance Gilman, I'm going to recuse myself from discussions or voting on items 6 through 9. As I have a pecuniary interest in the property, which is the subject matter of these discussion points.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Barbara Johnson, you have the floor or the podium?
I don't know. Guy, did you want to say anything before I start?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
excuse me. Good morning. For the record, Marty Johnson with GNA Consulting Group, financial advisor to the county. You've got some agenda items today that relate to the formation of the tax increment area for the effluent pipeline. And so what we wanted to do is walk through with you what the changes have been since we last talked about this and kind of lay out some of the information that you will be approving later in the agenda. So among other changes, the first major one is that we are no longer looking at doing a special assessment district. It'll strictly be a tax increment area. So there is no bonding. And since there is no bonding, there is no need for the county's uncommitted general fund balance to be part of the security. That strictly went along as part of the repayment of the bonds if the state bought them. So the county's general fund part is no longer at risk. We have updated the engineer's report to have the updated costs as well as to reflect some changes in the participation. Blockchains has opted out of the transaction at this particular point in time. And then with not issuing bonds, there's no longer a reserve fund. There's no longer a number of the costs that go along with bonding. And so those have been excluded from the project costs. And again, all of that's reflected in the engineer's report. As before, the reimbursement only comes from growth in revenues. If for whatever reason the revenues don't grow, construction doesn't materialize within this area, there won't be any incremental revenues. There won't be any reimbursement made to the participants. Then we've also received updated revenue projections from Applied Analysis, and Brian Gordon is here representing that firm, and they've been working with their participants. And so, based on the latest information, we have those revenue projections. Of course, those numbers are always subject to change based upon what actual development does happen and when it happens. And they did, as before, give us projections, assuming the pipeline is not built. And then the last point that I would make is that in the prior incarnations of this project, the tax increment area was going to last for 30 years. Because that was the expected life of the bonds. Now, without the bonds, the tax increment area now has a 21-year life. And so we'll walk through some of that as we go through this. And so, as I mentioned, we've updated the project costs. So you can still see the construction amount hasn't changed. The engineering, all of those parts haven't. What I'll call the bond-related transaction costs have changed. Again, there is no longer a reserve fund required. We don't need to pay an underwriter for the bonds. The project contingency is still there, you can see. So we're now looking at a total of 32. That's awfully blurry, isn't it? But anyway, $32.965 million in terms of what will be reimbursed. And again, without any interest on bonds or on the assessment payments, that is the limit on what will be reimbursed.
Marty, I'm sorry, I was reading. Did you stress the no interest in that reduction?
Yeah, I just mentioned it, yeah. And we'll mention it again. So the allocation of costs are made here. You can see what each individual, oh, Austin will help me perhaps get it a little bit clearer. Oh, there we go.
Thank you.
Thanks, Austin. So you can see that the costs are still being allocated to all of the participants. So we still have Rise Renewables and blockchains on that list. However, they are not participating in the reimbursement. So now we further reduce the amount that can be reimbursed down to this $28.3 million number. For purposes of the reimbursement, and this will become important in a couple of minutes when I explain how it works, but we're taking the amount of reimbursement due to each participant, dividing it by 20 for the 20 years that we expect there to be incremental growth in the revenues in the tax increment area, and that is going to be defined as what we call a scheduled payment. And again, that will become it's a term that we're going to use when we talk about how the flow of funds work out of the tax increment area. So this should all be old news because this is the same as the tax increment areas we've been talking about. Those property taxes in bold don't ever come into the tax increment area, so the school district's rates, they just keep going to the school district. Those don't ever come in. The modified business tax, sales tax, 50% of those get carved out before it ever shows up at the tax increment area. And then the rest of the revenues that are shown there will flow through the tax increment area. And so I've got a spreadsheet we'll go through a little bit later that shows this numerically. I tried to make a picture to describe this, and it got so complicated that this is better. So if you'll be patient, I'll try and get through it, and then we'll, if you've got questions, we can walk through that. So we talked about the incremental revenues that come in. And so, again, the 50% for the sales or 50% of the sales tax and modified business tax go to those governments. MBT goes to the state, sales tax, state, county, and also to the school district. The property tax we talked about as well. And so the revenues come in to the tax increment area account. The first thing that they are used for is to reimburse the county for any administrative costs they have related to the tax increment area. So the accounting, the allocation of revenues, all of those types of things will be paid for first. Second thing that gets paid out of the tax increment area revenues is that scheduled payment. So essentially 1/20th of what each participant is due in terms of their reimbursement. Once that payment has been made, if there are any remaining revenues, we split those 50-50 between what I'm calling a distribution account and an account that will go towards further reimbursement. So the further reimbursement is going to go to reduce the outstanding balance. As that outstanding balance goes down, it doesn't change the amount of the scheduled payments. That's going to stay the same. And again, I'll show this to you in a few minutes in terms of a spreadsheet. That distribution account, the 50% that goes out, is going to get allocated to all of the various parties that would have received those revenues. So the property tax piece goes in. It's going to come to the county, the fire district, and the state. Sales tax is going to go to the folks that levy sales tax. MBT, of course, all goes to the state. But it's going to come out in the same ratio that it would have gone in. And then those revenues are going to get split in the same ratio. So if the county is 2/3 of the property tax that goes into the tax increment area, the money that comes out that's allocated to the property tax, 2/3 of that will come back to the county. So any questions on how this flow of funds work? Okay. So these are some charts that we had done before, and we just updated them with the numbers. You can see the gross revenues and where they come from. You know, as you can tell, modified business tax contributes very little money in all of this. But you can see the gross taxes there, the amount that is actually flowing into the tax increment area over the 21-year life of the TIA, and then the amount that actually gets reimbursed. So you can see the reimbursement is a very, very small portion of the gross tax. This is the allocation of the reimbursement. So of that $27, $28 million that gets carved out, you can see that there's a big chunk that is the state. Those colors are a little bit hard to distinguish, but the biggest chunk comes from the state. There's a very small piece that's related to the school operating sales tax rate that's at the top. So that big purple chunk is the state general fund. You can see the county, the fire district, and the state from their 17-cent property tax rate. So, you know, approximately two-thirds of the reimbursement is coming out of the money that would otherwise be going to the state, and then approximately a third of it's coming, from county resources, kind of lumping in the fire district and all of that as well. So here's a revenue comparison that shows, using the flow of funds that I previously described, as the taxes come in each of these fiscal years, and I've only gone out to fiscal year 2028 because we expect that if the development projections and the revenues that applied analysis gave us, those pan out, the reimbursement will be done by 2028. And so that's the reason that we only go out through here. But you can see after we carve out the tax increment area revenues, the amount that gets reimbursed, and you can see in the first 2 years, almost first 3 years, most of the money that's generated does go towards reimbursement. But after that, you can see there's more money that flows out in terms of the net revenues. And then there in the very bottom line, you can see what the total taxes do would be if the pipeline is not built. Now, again, recognize that those are based on construction projections and business activity provided by the participants. So these numbers could very well be different when they pan out. But again, according to this particular analysis, even after the reimbursement, there is more money flowing from the business activity of the tax increment area if that pipeline gets built than if it does not. And so, particularly to the county, this graph does the comparison based on the county's property tax rate, and again, only goes out in terms of the graph to 2028. And you can see for the first, 5 or 6 years, it's, almost a wash in terms of where it's at with the pipeline, without the pipeline. But you can see in 2027 when we're getting very close to the end of that reimbursement happening, that there is substantially more revenue coming in if the pipeline is built than if it is not. And so then just to walk through the timeline, and then I'll pull up the spreadsheet and walk that through with you. So the Interim Finance Committee approved the formation of a tax increment area back in September. At the end of October, we had a resolution that you folks approved calling for the public hearing and setting that hearing for today. And so that's what we're here to do today, is have that hearing and to have the first reading of the creation ordinance and associated documents. And then assuming that that all gets approved today, we would be back December 4th for the second reading of the creation ordinance. Some other documents that need to be approved, interlocal agreements and things, but also a resolution that makes some determinations as to how that reimbursement money flows out after the reimbursement is made. And so that is the timeline. And so if you'll give me a second, I'll pull up the file that's got the spreadsheet on it.
Austin, I don't know if it's bigger.
And so I recognize that this is a little bit complicated, and believe me, Hugh and I have talked about this many times and both beaten our heads against the wall, but I think we've got something that works here. And so at the top of the pages, you can see, and again, there's the fiscal years going across. You can see what the total increment revenues are, and that's the row labeled A. And so then we have the amount that gets the construction cost that gets reimbursed. So this is strictly focused on the reimbursement piece. And, you know, again, I made some estimates based on when those construction costs get paid, but we come up to the $28.3 million. And so that creates that scheduled payment that I talked about. So you can see that negative number of $1,418,000. If you stretch that out for the life of the tax increment area, you would see that that would balance out to zero. Those numbers would add up to the $28 million. So then you come into that reimbursement, what I call the reimbursement subaccount. And so we have the scheduled payments that need to be reimbursed. We have the amount that can go towards that reimbursement, which is basically the revenues that are shown on line A. And if there is insufficient money, then there is a balance that gets carried forward, because those stay as a first priority to get reimbursed. And so then that's why in fiscal year 21, you see the amount reimbursed being the $2.5 million, because we've got $1.4 million of carryover, and then we've got the $1.418 million of scheduled payments that year. Then in 2022, we catch up to the point where we just have the scheduled payments being reimbursed in that particular line item. So then we come down and we have whatever revenues are remaining. And so you can see that those begin in fiscal year 22. And as I stated, those get split 50-50 between a distribution account and staying in for this reimbursement account. And so then we have the remaining revenue that drops down, and we have a balance forward that is the balance, essentially the construction costs at the beginning, but less the scheduled payments. And so then we go towards the reimbursement reduces that balance. And so you can see in 2028, we've actually only got, in addition to the scheduled payment, we've only got $60,000 or $60 left that we need to reimburse. And so we are done reimbursing the participants, again, in this scenario, in fiscal year 2028. And so then, as I mentioned, there's the distribution subaccount where that 50% shows up. And so that goes in, and then that gets distributed to sales tax, MBT, and property tax in the same ratios in which it went in. The vast majority of the sales tax money goes to the state. I mean, almost 99% of it. And so I haven't worried about breaking out the sales tax that goes for the other things, because they're such small numbers. But you can see under the property tax line that I have allocated that between the county, the fire district, and the state. And so you can see what money flows out under this revenue sharing agreement, as I'll refer to it, that is in the reimbursement agreement. So that is essentially how the mechanics work. And it again gives you some ideas on what the numbers might look like. But as you can see, we're reimbursing property owners for substantially less than we were before, mostly due to the change from not doing the bonds and that reduced interest, but also from the reduced costs and the fact that the participants, some of them have opted out. And again, then putting that revenue sharing in after the scheduled payments are made also provides some additional cash flow to the county early on in this process. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. We have Kendra Follette here that can address legal questions. And as I mentioned, Brian Gordon from Applied Analysis is also here.
Okay. Could you kind of clear up? I'm kind of cloudy on the distribution sales tax. What does that include? I mean, what does that entail?
So that is the portion of the sales tax that is going into the tax increment area. But in, I may have to have Brian clarify this, but due to the abatements that are made on sales tax, the vast majority of the sales tax revenue that's flowing into the tax increment area is the sales tax that goes to the state's general fund. So that's why you can see that little notation there after sales tax, 98.9% to the state.
Yeah.
The vast majority of that number is. So remember, the sales tax already gets carved out 50% right up front. Then there is a further split of that 50-50, and then that's the share of the sales tax that comes in. And again, almost all of that money goes to the state. There will be a little bit that would go to the county and the school district, but not much.
Yeah, okay. So let's say at the end of the cycle when we were, let's say our balance is zero, so that's the end of it, or...
And tax increment area goes away and the revenues get distributed the way they would have.
The tax increment area goes away, so then any new revenue would be generated off of their property values with or without the water kind of thing.
Correct. So the, let's go back.
So this line A, which is the increment, basically just is part of the regular revenue. And so those revenues just get distributed as the formulas require for those various taxes. And it's as though the tax, well, it's not as though. I mean, the tax increment area just doesn't exist. So that money goes to the governments that are due that money.
Right. That's good for me.
Okay, good. Pat, do you have any questions for Marty?
Not questions. I have a few comments.
Okay. We go to public comment first, then.
Let me go ahead and summarize just okay. as part of his presentation. So I just want to kind of hit, I think, and I'd ask for Hugh to either nod his head or nudge me if I forget one. Some of the positives about this that have kept us as staff continuing to work with the participants, and Elise is here from Switch, hey, and with Brian and Jeremy, are, again, the total elimination of debt and therefore the total elimination of any liability that the county or the state would have had under the special assessment district. That was very attractive to us. Two, the reduction in the amount of the reimbursements under the tax increment area from $65 million down to $28.3 million. Again, that's a huge drop. As Marty has indicated, you know, we were probably going to be in this under the special assessment with all those additional loaded costs of interest and bond issuance and those types of things. It was going to take us, I think, 20-plus years to get completely back to square one where all revenues were flowing to their proper recipients. That's now reduced to about 9 years if the build-out goes the same. And again, the thing I want to stress, while there's the county making this investment, and that's the way I look at it, and I think that's the way he looks at it too, is it's an investment to incent the more rapid and larger build out. At the same time, the schools start participating the minute build out starts. They're protected. So I think you're going to see even greater things happen in our schools much sooner than the county. But the county, with that 50% protected, still has a very good revenue stream during it and a fabulous revenue stream, hopefully about 9 years from now. So you agree? Those are my summations.
Great. We'll go ahead and open up for public comment now. So, Ms. Barr, give your hand up. Come on up. We have kind of a small attendance today, so I don't think we need to do the time clock today. Everybody would
Nicole Barks.
Maybe not filibuster today. We'll just.
I don't filibuster. I ask questions. Nicole Barks, Story County resident. I haven't been swimming in this as you guys have, and so some of the terms, since I've only recently been able to review this, are still not settled in my mind. So I just have a couple of clarifying questions. On your page 4, sales tax 50% protected, and it lists the four items that the other 50% would be subject to getting taxed. One of them is the VMT. My question is, to the extent that that VMT quarter cent sales tax was a ballot initiative passed by our citizens for the express purpose of 100% of that going to the VMT, how can this ordinance supersede a vote by the people and have this money be part of the tax increment area?
Either Kendra or Keith. And Kendra's under the weather today, but improving.
Kendra Follett from Sherman and Howard. The statute just doesn't exempt that. I mean, the statute exempts these various things that Marty has indicated, like the school district operating rate, the school debt rate that's also voted. It just doesn't.
Okay, so with that said, I guess we're going to look at this as that the legislation that was passed is state law, and state law trumps county ordinance. Federal government trumps state. So as you go up the food chain, the tax increment area that is in place by the state of Nevada through the legislative process.
So it trumps the vote of the people.
It does.
Okay. And then your slide 5, and this is where I'm confused, where it says the TIA funds are used as follows. First line is county gets reimbursed for administrative expenses. Got that. Reimbursement to the participants for the scheduled payment. I think I get that. But then on line 3, where it talks about remaining revenues are split 50-50 between further reimbursement. What is the further reimbursement outside of what the scheduled payment is, which you define on you define as 20 equal installments for reimbursement? So there seem to be multiple reimbursements happening, and I don't understand what they are.
Sure. Sorry. And so, oh, no problem. So if you'll look up here, the scheduled reimbursements have a first priority, so they get paid. The only thing that comes above them is the administrative cost, which I'm not showing. Right. So that's the scheduled payment. You can see line B, construction cost. The next one is the scheduled payment.
We've just kind of made that term.
Yeah, I came up with that term. And so it's nothing that occurs in statute. So that is the construction cost over 20 years.
As opposed to allowing all to be
subject
to reimbursement.
Right. Because what happens is we reimburse them for that amount, then we have the 50-50 split, so you can see that greenish line, the distribution subaccount. So after they've been reimbursed for their scheduled payment, then we split it 50-50, whatever's left, and then the amount that's left in the reimbursement account goes towards reducing the outstanding balance.
The outstanding balance of what?
The total amount, the $28 million less the scheduled payments that have been incurred today.
May I take a stab at this in a little different terms? And this is going to be a very bad analogy because it's not debt. But if we had an interest-free loan right now, think of them as principal, additional principal payments. Okay,
yeah.
We're paying it down faster with that reimbursement sub-account. So if you add the $1.418 million straight across, that's not going to add up to $28 million. Correct, Marty?
Well, if you went out the whole 20 years.
Yeah, if you went out all 20 years, it would. But we're going to add the extra principal after the 50% protected. We're going to add that and pay off the reimbursement total much earlier.
That's a much better analogy. It is like making extra payments on your home loan.
Isn't this in anticipation that there will be additional revenue coming
yes,
in?
Yes, absolutely.
If there isn't additional revenue coming in,
then it doesn't matter.
That line item isn't going to be there.
Correct.
Are we paying more than the $28 million and change?
No. Yep.
So all you did with the 1.4 is stop calculating it after 28 or whatever year that is.
29.
But
because
as
at that
you say,
point
it continues
done.
To go. So because you use multiple reimbursements here, which make me go, wait a minute, it's $28 million divided by 20 years or whatever it is, that's it. But you've got reimbursement for scheduled payment, then further reimbursement, and these are not terms. You know, if you invented the term, and if you're using an analogy that's a loan analogy, I think we could all relate to that. That's why I'm saying I don't get this because I've never seen these terms. It makes me think we're paying double.
And we're not. The further reimbursement is essentially going to reduce the balance that is owed to the bridges.
Just trying to get it.
$1.4 million is the 20 divided by 20. It's the life of the TIA. So we never get out to the 20 years because we're
doing the reimbursement. Right, we're prepaying.
You're prepaying the expenses. They're front-end loaded on what they're paying. We're saying we're going to spread out their reimbursement over time, but as revenue comes in, we will more front-end load the reimbursement.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Something that's also, that's just not clear in this.
Okay, I apologize.
But who cares? Lastly, who owns this pipeline at the end of the day?
That would be Tri-GID.
Is that in this?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
What's the name of that document?
So we're funding it, but it's missing in here a key point that says we're funding an asset for which we retain no ownership. So somewhere, I think that's clarified and brought up front.
I refer to Kendra.
So today is first reading of the creation ordinance of the TIA. The second reading and possible adoption will be on December 4th. Also on that date, the board will consider the cooperative agreement, which is an agreement between the county and the Tri-GID with respect to the ownership. And that will occur in connection with the final adoption, possible adoption of the creation ordinance. So, yes, it will happen.
So the cooperative agreement is essentially a done deal that we won't be able to discuss for possible changes between now and the 4th, because it sounds as if, not the 4th, is it the 4th?
The 4th.
Whatever. Between now and the 4th, which means the public will get presented with that cooperative agreement a couple of days before the 4th to review it. And if there are any comments on the 4th for that cooperative agreement, it's tough noogies because it'll get passed. We can't get a copy of that agreement before. Why couldn't we have had a copy of the agreement in today's meeting to provide input to in case we needed changes before the 4th? Because it sounds like on the 4th, come hell or high water, you're going to vote on this. Whether it's approved or not, there's the vote. Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yep, she's behind you.
Sorry.
So these things are just scheduled for consideration by the board, but nothing is predetermined.
So it's possible on the 4th for you to approve or deny the TIA and separate that cooperative agreement till another date?
Yes, anything is possible. The creation ordinance may not be passed on first reading today. I mean, there's nothing is predetermined.
I disagree, but all right, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Further public comment?
Morning. For the record, Sam Soul, Gold Hill. Marty, in your presentation, you had indicated that there's an apportionment of costs, of project costs. I'm assuming that means that the four firms here that are listed, Switch, Google, Tesla, five firms, Emerald City, Reno Land, are going to write checks for these items in lieu of the special assessment district up front to get the construction going. Is that a correct assumption?
We might have to have Ryan Gordon address this, but my understanding is that some of them are responsible for paying up front, some are paying over time, but no one gets reimbursed until they can prove that they have paid their share of the construction costs. So in the event that they pay, you know, the developer later on in the process, they don't pay the developer, they don't get reimbursed. So, Brian, I don't know if you want to clarify that or if that was sufficient. Thanks, Marty. Brian Gordon from Applied Analysis for the record. That's correct. The master developer will be fronting the costs at the start of the project and paying the entirety of the project cost, and then the private participants will be reimbursing the master developer for their shares of the project cost.
So then that means that there's an entity referred to as the master developer as opposed to these individual firms that's going to be managing the construction?
That's correct. There's a master developer that's going to build the project.
Do we have any documentation either in the packet or anything that the public can view to look at the formation, who those folks are, what their responsibilities are, what contractual, as Mr. Johnson alluded to, contractual obligations that they're going to actually pay this money?
Kendra Follett. So under the terms of the reimbursement agreement, any payment made by one of these participants, which are, of course, not the legal names of the property owners, but by each property owner, has to be submitted to the county, and the county has the ability to verify the payment.
So I guess the answer to the question is I'm not really sure who's going to be writing the checks, but at some point checks will be written to get the construction started.
Yeah. I think as Brian Eibel said, Brian said this more clearly, the developer, Trick, is the one that is responsible for paying for the construction of the pipeline, correct? In essence.
Yes, Tahoe Reno Industrial.
And then they will get reimbursed by the property owners. I have not seen any of those agreements because we won't reimburse any of those costs unless they can prove that they have paid the developer for their share. So if the developer puts in the pipeline and all of these people walk, they don't get reimbursed. So the county would not be out, the state, the fire district, they're not out any money if these people don't actually step up and make their payments at whatever point in time they are required to make them under their agreements with the developer.
Okay, thank you. So to be clear then for the record, Roger Norman will be conducting the construction and then expecting reimbursement from Switch, Tesla, Google, Reno Land, and Emerald City. Is that a fair?
Subject to my counsel, we're not going to single out Roger Norman. We don't necessarily know as the county every intimate detail about who is Tri LLC. The answer to the question, I believe, is Tri LLC.
Okay. All right. So for clarity, Tri LLC will be responsible for the construction, and then once that's done, they'll be responsible for collecting the money from the participants, and then once we verify that they've actually paid up, we'll start reimbursing them.
Correct.
Okay, very good. So then I just really have a general question for everyone here, and I'd like to color it with some background. As you know, or as you may know, Amazon has just announced that they've split their the awarding of their new corporate office to Long Island and to Virginia. And the richest guy in the world, depending on where Amazon stock is, Jeff Bezos, worth about $160 billion, is asking for New York and Virginia to come up with $1.2 billion each for him to build his company headquarters in their backyard. Bottom line is he's going to build that company headquarters somewhere regardless. And so to tie it to what we're talking about here today, I know that Switch has a substantial investment in the park, and Emerald City has shelled out, or I'm sorry, Blockchain has shelled out $175 million for the vacant land and has some wonderful plans out there. Tesla obviously isn't going anywhere unless they go bankrupt. And Google has probably made, the $29 million that they paid for their property while we've had our meeting here today selling ads. My question to you is this, and I know Commissioner McBride, Mr. Whitman, I'm sorry, Mr. Excuse me, Mr. Whitten. We were all in attendance at the Interim Finance Committee when the legislature approved the tax increment area that we're talking about today. One of the legislators made the statement, why is it that we continue to ask the public
to invest future tax revenues to prime a pump that is running at maximum capacity. My question to you is, again, given the fact that all of these companies have substantial investments and aren't going anywhere, whether or not we commit public future public revenues to this pipeline, why are we doing it?
I'll take a stab at that. I'm looking for a news release that I'm going to give you an approximate number, and I wish I could find it. I'll send it to you, Sam. Respectfully, I disagree with that particular legislature's observations that the pipeline is running at maximum. What's referenced there? Is it revenues or is it jobs? I would suspect her point is jobs. Over the weekend or possibly Friday, Google announced the placement of a very sizable data center in Henderson, I believe. I don't have the exact numbers of what CapEx is. It was sizable, like, as you mentioned. Switch has already started to invest in Story County, and I believe the net number of jobs that I saw was striking. It was 50, or right around 50.
That's the number I read as well. Yeah.
You know, I certainly respect that legislator, but I disagree with her comments.
So let me then, again, perhaps paraphrase it a different way and ask the same question. Given the fact that Google is going to build, whether we give them $21 million or not, or whatever their portion of the payment is, Switch clearly isn't going to dismantle the Citadel and move it somewhere else if they don't get this water, if we don't give them the $16 million. Tesla, they're not going anywhere unless they go under, and if they do, Panasonic will probably take up the slack. And so my question is, again, why would we do this? These guys are billion-dollar global companies who don't need our revenue to continue to be profitable. These folks are going to be profitable anyway. And frankly, if their business model can't survive without taxpayer revenue, then Mr. McBride, you don't need taxpayer revenue to stay in business. And if you did, you would have to suffer the consequences. I'm still befuddled as to why it is that we have to commit a single penny of future revenue based upon the fact that we are already invested that way, if you want to call it an investment.
Okay, thank you.
I need an answer to the question.
Sam, here's the deal. We've gone over this numerous times in these meetings having to do with the pipeline. You asking the same question, us giving you the same answer, doesn't get us any further ahead.
I've never asked this question.
Let me explain it to you one more time. This is a tool put in place by the state legislature through the governor and the governor's office of economic development to go ahead and increase business and jobs in Nevada. And that's why it's done. It's done, and if they think the economic engine is running at full steam, there's always highs and lows in economies. It's cyclical, and we know what it is. So what the governor likes is the more diversification away from gaming so that we have more jobs that are more stable, so when we have downturn than tourism, it doesn't wipe out the whole economy like it has in the past. So that is it in a nutshell. We're trying to diversify the economy and create more jobs that are long-lasting. And these are – I'm thinking that people who work in the governor's office of economic development are probably some of the brightest people, and that's why they go to the legislature and they get these laws passed for the benefit of all of Nevada.
Very good. In the packet, you'll see that there are a substantial number of people, residents of Story County, who oppose this.
What are you talking about now?
You're on another item, Sam.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that these were related. I have gone door-to-door during the campaign and talked to a number of people, literally hundreds, who are opposed to this. Taxpayers of Story County.
But the campaign season is over. Okay. And you can't be representing other people here. You're representing yourself.
I totally understand that. I've collected signatures from these folks, which are part of this packet.
Do you have anything else related to today's presentation of the TIA? It's presented by Mr. Johnson and Kendra.
No, but I do encourage you to vote against this, regardless of what the state legislature has done for us. You guys have the opportunity to represent your constituents and not commit future tax revenue to billion-dollar global companies.
Thank you for your comments.
Appreciate it. Okay. We'll continue on. Additional public comment. Anybody else? Okay. Let's move along now to item number 7. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. This is a public hearing on a proposed undertaking concerning a tax increment area formed pursuant to Nevada Revised Statutes, Chapter 278C. Who's going to take this one?
Kendra.
Kendra?
Kendra Follett from Sherman and Howard. This is the time for a public hearing, and I would ask the chair to open the public hearing for public comments.
That you're opening a public hearing for public comment.
Okay. So at this time, we're opening a public hearing for public comment concerning the tax increment area formed pursuant to the Nevada Revised Statutes. Any additional comments? Ms. Park.
So this is Kendra Follett from Sherman and Howard. So this was this public hearing was called by the previous provisional order resolution. It has been noticed by publication, by posting, and by mailing to the property owners as required by NRS 278C. And this is the time of the public hearing.
Yes, very good. Have we received any correspondence regarding this item?
This was in your package.
Okay. Very good. Okay, Ms. Park, come on up.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. I'd like to read into the record the cover letter to the correspondence that I submitted, if that's okay. Dear Ms. Stevens, enclosed, please find the signatures of 110 Story County residents who oppose the use of public funds to reimburse the companies at TRIC for the effluent pipeline proposed through Resolution 18-15517, which establishes a tax increment area, and 10 signatures of Story County residents who are undecided on the same issue. The signatures were obtained through face-to-face public meetings as well as an online petition. I can provide the online file if you wish. I have also enclosed my prior two statements, which were read into the record at the commission meetings on August 7, 2018 and September 18, 2018, also opposing the use of public funds through the establishment of a TIA to reimburse the companies at TRIC for the construction of the effluent pipeline currently proposed through Resolution 18-517. I would like to reiterate that I believe that the pipeline project is needed, and I wholeheartedly support the county in its efforts to help TRIC in getting the water rights, the water rights of ways, and other logistics required to make the pipeline happen. I stopped short of utilizing public funds to pay for the pipeline or in reimbursing those companies and the developer for its construction or its maintenance. By public funds, I mean any and all revenues generated within Story County by residents or other entities, inclusive of the companies at TRIC, which are assessed through taxes or fees. With an eye on stable future revenues, the state of Nevada and Story County has already given many of these companies abatements and incentives to locate and operate here. The abatements and incentives give those companies the financial relief to more rapidly expand and develop. This is good for Nevada, and this is good for Story County. However, if after receiving the incentives, and even if without them, if their financial conditions on their own do not allow them to develop their investments without more public money, then they have deeper problems, and the state and the county is propping them up with money that could otherwise benefit the residents. Some of the companies at TRIC may not have located there without the abatements and incentives. While I understand that, I also agree with many other Story County residents that the continued use of public funds to keep them here is not the best use of our financial resources, which would be better spent on improved and increased services for our residents. Sincerely, Nicole Bart. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Once again, I'll ask if there's any additional public comment.
Again, Sam Toll, Gold Hill. I'd just like to point out that that should you decide to approve this TIA today, you will add some grease to a slippery slope that will provide future TIAs to be created should the whim of a billion-dollar global company decide that they need our tax revenues to prop up their businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, additional public comment. Hearing none, that concludes item 7. We'll move on now to item number 8. This is discussion.
I think you need to approve first reading.
No, this is just a public hearing.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. All righty. Moving along now to item number 8. This is discussion with possible action. Consideration and possible action on bill number 110. First reading of ordinance number 18-299, an ordinance creating the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center tax increment area pursuant to Nevada Revised Statutes, Chapter 278C, ordering an undertaking relating to the tax increment area, ordering an undertaking relating to the tax increment area, creating the tax increment account for the undertaking and ratifying action taken by county officers towards the undertaking and the tax increment area. All right, let's talk about the tax increment area.
Kendra Follett. So this is an ordinance for first reading, creating the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center tax increment area under NRS 278C. This may only follow the provisional order resolution and noticing of the public hearing that you just held and holding the public hearing.
Thank you, Kendra. So.
Would you like me to read that?
Do you want to read
the title? Sure.
I'll do it if you're not up.
No, that is fine.
Okay.
Bill number 110, an ordinance creating the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center tax increment area pursuant to Nevada Revised Statutes, Chapter 278C, ordering an undertaking relating to the tax increment area, creating the tax increment account for the undertaking, ratifying action taken by county officers toward the undertaking in the tax increment area, and providing other matters related thereto.
Very good. So, this is like our third or fourth item we've gone over today. So, once again, we'll open it up. We'll have some public comment on this. Ms. Barr?
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. Just curious, I've seen this in a couple of areas in the contracts where it talks about, under staff summary, second paragraph, this ordinance authorizes, after all the chapters, it says under I, payments under contracts with the owners to reimburse the owners. What contracts? Can we have copies of those contracts?
The contract referred there is the reimbursement agreement that is item number 9.
So,
and that's statutory language. That's from 278C. It allows payments under contracts, and the contract in this instance is the reimbursement agreement.
Okay. Again, the language, a contract to me is different than an agreement. So you're saying that.
Move over a little closer to the microphone, please.
I said the language here is inconsistent. So. I know what the agreement is because it's in the packet. This speaks to a contract, which leads me to believe that it's a different document. So you're saying contract in this language is the same as agreement.
As explained by the bond counsel.
Okay. Again, in the future, you may want to clarify that because it looks like it's two different documents.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any additional comments? Public comment on item number 8? Pat, do you have anything to follow up on this?
No, sir.
Legal counsel?
Nothing from
me. Okay.
I'm good.
You get a motion to approve?
High Commissioner Jack McGuffey moved to introduce on first reading Bill Number 110, creating the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center tax increment area pursuant to Nevada Revised Statute Chapter 278C, ordering an undertaking related to the tax increment area, creating the tax increment account for the undertaking and ratifying action taken by county officers toward the undertaking and the tax
increment area.
Okay. I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve bill number, first reading of bill number 110, ordinance number 18-299. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, move along now to item number 9. This is discussion of possible action. Consideration of possible action on a resolution number 18-521, approving the form of the reimbursement agreement among the county and all owners of the property in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center tax increment area.
Go ahead. I'd just like to tell the truth. Okay.
Kendra Follett, the request is to defer this item to December 4th.
Okay. Is there public comment on this item? Okay, it's been asked we continue this item to December the 4th, so I get a motion for that.
I'll make a motion to continue item 9 to the December 4th commissioner meeting held in this courtroom at 10 a.m.
I'll second your motion. I move to second to continue this item. December the 4th, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. We'll welcome Commissioner Gilman back up to the table. Thank you, Kendra. Moving along now to item number 13, discussion and possible action. This is on Bill 107, the second reading of Ordinance 18-284, an ordinance revising Chapter 17.84 of the Story County Code, addressing signs and billboards, and amending the other provisions in Title 17 Zoning Code. Captain Canfield.
Yes, thank you. Again, this is the second reading of the sign ordinance. The discussion that we had, a couple of vocabulary changes last time have been added into the document. We have identified one more small change relating to the visibility triangles. So one of them is on page 41 of 64. right in the middle of the page, item G is in George. If you read through that about in the middle, it talks about having a base that's higher than 8 feet above street grade level or a total height not exceeding 2 feet. We'd like to change that to 3 feet to be consistent with some other areas in the code.
Three feet above?
Above street grade level.
Okay.
And then it's that same condition restated, but it's on page 51 of 64.
Okay.
And it would be the same thing, changing it from 2 feet to 3 feet. The idea being that you want something, it could be 3 feet high, but when you're driving, you can still see there's a window area there that doesn't block anything.
Yeah, because when I wrote the first ordinance, they were driving Model Ts, so it was a little bit paper.
Real low. So. Other than that, staff is recommending approval of the ordinance. We think we're ready to go.
So why don't we open up for any public comment regarding the sign ordinance revision. Yeah. I know it's been a long time in the making, Kathy, and I know you put an immense amount of effort into it, so thank you very much for all of this. Have we received any correspondence of anyone objecting to anything which is
No. In fact, over the time period that I've done this, I've talked to a couple of different business owners that have come in with just questions about what they want to do, and this is actually allowing them to do what they want to do, where right now they're it doesn't meet the existing code.
Okay.
Yeah, this has been going on a while, and our site ordinances have always been being challenged because someone did this or that or was done in the past. And we've got the size of the signs, how many signs, of where you can put your signs, and it even got into the political campaign signs. So, I mean, this has been going on. You guys have been working on this for a few years, and I'm glad to finally see it. coming to a closure.
Yeah, it seems like immediately following the last revision on this, staff come out and said we can't enforce this ordinance.
And again, I offer to anybody that you might be talking to or anybody in the public, if somebody has a question about their business or something, I'm more than happy to go out there and go over it all with them.
I know you've worked workshops at tourism commission meetings. Mm-hmm. It's been brought up numerous times at your planning commission meetings. So. Okay. Once again, any other public comment regarding the sign ordinance? New picture? Hearing none? Can we get a motion?
In accordance with the recommendations by staff and the Planning Commission, I, Commissioner Jack McGuffey, motion to approve the second reading of Bill Number 107, Ordinance Number 18-284, and Ordinance Revising Chapter 17.84 of the Story County Code addressing signs and billboards and amending other provisions of Title 17 Zoning Code of the Story County Code relating to signs and billboards and providing for other matters properly related thereto.
Second your motion.
All right. We move to second to approve the second reading of Ordinance 18-284. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. All right. Moving along now to item number 14, public comment. Does someone like to present public comment today? Mr. Gilbert, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you. Joey Gilbert, on behalf of the Mustang Ranch. If I may, can I provide everyone just with a copy, at least for the record, of a letter sent by Don Gilman to Under Sheriff Dozen, just so you all have it.
Do you have a copy that I can give one of the clerk? Thanks, Joey.
Give me a copy, please.
I'll give you mine, Keith.
And thank you. I'm here today just to quickly address an issue that has obviously brought me up here many times. I've been working in this capacity for a couple years now. It's just simple enforcement of a particular section of the code regarding having a work card in another county. And I'm here today because enforcement of this particular section was never applied or enforced before like it is now until after Lance Gilman took issue with Sheriff Antonoro's conduct, which ultimately became an embroiled in legal action and continues to this day, which has also subsequently resulted in the sheriff being recused from the brothel board. My client and I are hopeful that this body will take notice of this kind of tomfoolery as you see here and keep in mind the concerns that the sheriff's office has for this enforcement action, which in my opinion, I've been doing this now for a couple years, is invalid, but purposely done in a time and manner that will cause the maximum negative impact and carnage, if you will, to a lady who's simply trying to work. Put simply, what I mean by this is that time and time again, based on my personal experience, these work cards are always pulled on a Friday afternoon and on occasion on a holiday weekend and as far as possible from a brothel board meeting so it can inflict maximum damage. Finally, I'll just state that not having two work cards was originally put into place to prevent a lady from working as both a bartender, for example, and as a working lady at the same time. All I would propose to this body is that please consider how it would look if a gentleman had a business license down in Clark County and then wanted to do some work up in Story County or Washoe County and was denied for having that license. And we're here today because it just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's unreasonable. It's cruel. And if you ask me, at the end of the day, these actions are targeting women for the simple fact that they work for Lance Gilman in that capacity, women or a bartender, for that example. I mean, for that matter. And so I think it's unfair, and I think that it's all due to the personal animus of the sheriff and his undersheriff, Mr. Dozen. I don't know if he decided to join us today. We ask that he be here. And simply put, guys, what took place is a work card was issued. A couple days later, on a Friday afternoon, it was revoked because it was said the young lady had a work card in Nye County. My team and the client I work for was able to quickly call down there and verify there was no work card in Nye County. The sheriff's office could have done the same. They refused to, and then they said it was after 5 p.m. and there's nothing that could be done until Monday. And I'm just here because at the end of the day, it's just not fair, and it's not how you can run a business, and it keeps happening, and I wanted to provide that comment today.
Thank you, Mr. Gilbert.
Yes, sir.
All right. Additional public comment.
Again, for the record, Sam told Gold Hill once again to express my desire for the board to move public comment to the beginning and the end of the meeting, which is how almost every other public board that I've ever attended conducts business. Mr. Gilbert had to sit through an hour and a half, approximately, of this meeting. I know that Mr. Gilbert is an attorney. I'm guessing that he makes in excess of $200-$300 an hour, costing his client money which would have otherwise been spent doing actual work. Again, this sends a simple message, a clear message, that the constituents come last. And I think that by the actions today with the taxpayer increment area, that does nothing more but reinforce that. So at some point, those chickens will come home to roost, and the public who are being harmed or being dissuaded from coming to these meetings because they have to sit through an hour of ice pick in the eye socket drudgery and are unable to be able to speak their piece. So once again, it would be great if the constituents could come first for a change. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional public comment. Speak now, or we'll see you on December the 4th, 10 a.m., right here.